Next item on the agenda is a report from the Special Education Advisory Committee. Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you, Randy. Are you going to kick us off on this? Dr. Randy Boyer and our Exceptional Student Services Unit, and along with staff and the Special Ed Advisory Committee. So, go ahead.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Chairman Lundeen, State Board members, Commissioner Hammond. We are cognizant of the time constraints, so we're going to move rather quickly. As Commissioner Hammond said, I'm Randy Boyer, Assistant Commissioner for the Exceptional Student Services Unit. I would like to introduce Cindy Dasher, our supervisor for our parent and for our parent and family school partnering leadership team. Cindy will introduce our presenters and also talk about our purpose here today.
Thank you and welcome.
Chairman Lundeen, can you hear me?
We can hear you. You're doing great.
The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act requires that every state establish and maintain a state advisory panel. The Colorado Special Education Advisory Committee, or SEAC, is our state's advisory panel. SEAC is charged with advising on the education of students with disabilities and provides for diverse stakeholder representation. In its advisory role, the committee submits an annual report to the state board, which you have before you today. Today, it is my pleasure to introduce the chairs, the co-chairs, who will present and discuss the committee's activities. To my immediate left is Zoanne Holmes. Zoanne is serving in her sixth and final year on the Colorado Special Education Advisory Committee. She is a parent of five children, including a daughter with multiple disabilities. With 20 years teaching experience, she is teaching in Douglas County School District while also attending UNC, working towards a master's degree in educational leadership. Zoanne believes in collaboration to best meet the needs of students and enjoys seeing parents become active in their students' educational processes. Next to Zoanne is Pat Chamberlain. Pat earned a Bachelor of Science degree in elementary education from Penn State University, a master's degree in human resources administration, and specialist degree in educational administration from Rutgers University. She has 8 years teaching experience and many years of management experience in the field of human resources. She is the mother of three children, including a son with multiple disabilities. This is Pat's sixth and final year on SEAC.
Welcome. A familiar
Chairman
face.
Lundeen.
Hi, Zoanne.
Thank you. It's good to see you. In the essence of time, we've given you a packet in advance, and I hope you have had the opportunity to glance through it, but it does talk about the federal laws and what we must do as a SEAC committee. And we've given an overview of each of our subcommittees. There's a communication, membership bylaws committee, public policy and legislative committee, and a state performance plan subcommittee. In more detail in your annual report, our activities that I have done, and we had posted those up on the screen for you. We're going to kind of skip past those, and you can look at those, some big highlights of what we have accomplished in that year. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Pat.
Hello, everybody, Chairman.
Welcome.
Thank you. We try to just respect your time and shorten our report.
Well, you've been patient with us, so we will be patient with you as well.
Okay. One of the big accomplishments, and I must share with you that we prepared this report for June, which is when we typically present, and for a variety of reasons, it's been postponed. So we're just getting to you, and we're glad we're here.
In December.
We are on the slide that's on the mental health ad hoc subcommittee, and it was a group of people on the SEAC that gave recommendations or actually wrote a paper, which is also included in your paperwork, on what feelings were, what SEAC thinks we should do to help students who have mental health issues. One of them is to implement the Colorado Department of Education Comprehensive Health and Physical Education Plan. And the reason that's really being supported is to support the social and emotional health of kids as well as the physical health. Use multi-tiered system of supports, including response to intervention and positive behavior interventions and support. trained school about families and trained school staff and family members about mental illness. And then there is support the legal mandates in House Bill 12-1345 and House Bill 11-1254. In essence, 1345 is an old-fashioned school finance act. It allots $480,000 for a school counselor core grant program and basically puts licensed school counselors in middle and high schools in areas that ordinarily wouldn't be able to afford them. This bill also allows $3.8 million to reimburse school districts and charter schools for serving at-risk students. And what the concern is that at-risk students is a funding factor in the school finance formula, but sometimes once it's embedded in the formula, the product per pupil amount, it gets lost and doesn't always follow the at-risk student to where they're being served. So that's a concern. It also provides $3 million for literacy assessment equipment and training for students. Then House Bill 11-1254 is an anti-bullying bill, and I think we're making progress in schools with anti-bullying. And, of course, students with disabilities are often involved in bullying situations. On our next slide, we'd like to share with you the meat of our presentation. And these are discussions that SEAC has heard regarding parental concerns, something you might not ordinarily hear from CDE. And these bullets are not like a consensus. These are just things that have been shared with us. There are no statistics behind them or anything. That's CDE's job. We're just going to share with you what we have heard. There is some concern about extended school year. I served on the committee a couple of years ago as a SEAC representative where guidelines for extended school year were changed. In prior years, extended school year was offered to students with IEPs who had not completed or the progress they needed to make on their IEP goals, and their IEP goals could be continued in the summer. Is a very small percentage of the lowest achieving kids, basically. So it's not a huge number of kids. In the past, regression and recoupment has been the standard, and now additional factors have been able to be considered, including what other services they have available, the students have available to them in the summer, and a variety of other things. ESY by law is driven by individual students' IEPs and should be different for most students, logically. But the standard practice that we hear parents bring up is in many school districts is there's 3 weeks in the summer with a predetermined offering. As a state goes forward with results-driven accountability and we look at the gaps between students with disabilities and how they're achieving, I think what we should give consideration to what the parents are saying and try to narrow that gap by extending school year services the way they were supposed to be determined, by individually looking at IEP goals and the progress on the IEP goals. This will boost student achievement in areas that are being measured by the state and close that achievement gap of students with disabilities. Early dispute resolution is the next bullet. I also worked on that committee, and I believe that CDE is making progress in trying to get to solving disputes before they happen, and that's definitely the strategy we would support, developing an ongoing and positive relationship with families and schools. Making sure that it's positive communication occurs throughout the school year. It's not just one meeting and you knock heads, and so it's an ongoing thing. And we support the work and hope to continue to partner with CDE in making that process go forward. Funding for special education is pretty no-brainer. Won't speak to that. There's not enough of it. I don't have this. So, IEPs goals need to be individual. Parents are saying that they'd like to see student progress on goals and accountability for the progress on the goals. So some parents report that when a student doesn't make progress on a goal, it gets dropped off the IEP and the individual education plan. And so the results-driven accountability for parents translates to what are the goals and results for my child? What progress is my child making, and how do we account for that? Who's responsible, and how do we go forward with it? One of the things that might support that is a statewide initiative for a statewide IEP, individual education plan. So if we have available to school districts the option of using a statewide IEP, and we have a computerized system of tracking individual goals on those IEPs, then the state's going to be able to capture progress and see, well, you know, here's what individual growth is on IEPs. What do we need to do about it? What are the key areas that we're not addressing? The next one, you might think, why is that up there? Lack of inpatient hospital beds for students with mental health needs, especially those with dual diagnoses. The reason it's up there is because there are 4 beds in the state of Colorado for the children with developmental disabilities and co-concurring mental health illnesses. That's in Children's Hospital. My family's been through it. My son's been there. We've literally slept in the emergency room for I think the most that we personally have done is about 6 days, where our family goes and sleeps there until a bed becomes available. I know families that have slept there for 2 weeks for bed to turn over of the 4 beds. Why should you care about that? Just because the school districts and the families are having to provide services for these kids that are not getting beds in hospitals. So school districts are and administrators, educators, teachers, staff are saying, we can't support these kids. We don't have the tools. We there's too many of them, too severe. So we just want to bring that to the forefront. The PARC assessment for and testing, I'm sure you've heard a lot of, and I know you are reconsidering those things, but for students with disabilities, there are many obstacles that parents have shared. One is simply attention span of their kids able to sit down for hours at a computer and take the test. Other is the computer and tech savvy necessary to complete the test. I know that I have 3 kids, and 2 of my daughters are pretty computer savvy, but my son is not. You know, he can get onto the computer, but that's about it. He doesn't know how to pick an eraser tool, erase the answer, and I don't know how that's going to happen. There's a tremendous language load in the PARC testing, so you have to be a great reader to be able to read on grade level and perform well. And we have heard, and particularly at our September meeting, we had a parent come forward who was also a paraeducation and educator in a school district. And she said to us, what can we do about requiring kids to test on their grade level? And according to Colorado law, all students need to test on their grade level. But if you have kids, for instance, an 11th grader that reads at a 3rd grade level, and you stick them in front of a computer that's got 11th grade reading material, what's the outcome going to be? How valid and reliable will that PARC test be for those students? So what can we believe that should be addressed, hopefully by the legislature or some other means. Maybe the IEP team can determine at what level kids should be tested. So 1 year, that kid could test at a 4th grade level, the next one could be a 5th grade. And even though he's in 11th grade, you can see progress, and people would get credit for the progress.
Some further parental concerns were revolving around the graduation rates of students with disabilities and the likeliness that might decrease when the new graduation guidelines are implemented. We've had several members that have served on the State Graduation Guidelines Committee, and there's been great concern around that, in that it, when you get to a point where it's hopeless, you're not going to meet all of the local districts' graduation requirements, why finish school? And so I know Randy could speak to what those numbers look like. We heard from that in November at our CAC meeting from CDE, and the numbers are not at all pretty, and they likely will drop when students feel like, well, if I'm not going to graduate, if I'm only going to get a certificate that says I participated in high school, which also sometimes makes it difficult for individuals to go on to higher education. Another concern brought up was inconsistent transition services across the state and the post-secondary outcomes, including employment for students with disabilities. As a state as a whole, it's been difficult for students to find employment or to figure out what they're going to be doing next with their post-secondary outcomes. We brought in some speakers this year that talked about some phenomenal services that were going on in regards to transition services, but we've heard over and over from parents that that's not every district, that's an occasional district, and many parents are concerned about what transition looks like, and sometimes even having it put in appropriately in a child's IEP at an early age. So the inconsistent transition services has been a concern. Also, the significant need for vocational education. A lot of our students with an IEP may not head towards college. We'd love for them to have that option and opportunity, and some of them do with support, but vocational education is almost a thing of the past. I'm looking at you guys thinking back in my day in high school, there was a lot more opportunities for vocational education for students. And if that is a track that they would like to pursue, the opportunities are slim to try to find a school that even offers vocational education for a lot of students who aren't going to go the academic route. And then, of course, the READ Act, which we've talked about in depth with you, Dr. Shuffle, and as a group. Pat, do you want to address the new direction for some of them?
Okay. Well, we SEAC does support the results-driven accountability shift. In the past, CD has focused on compliance indicators, whether the IEP has been filled out in enough time, whether a notice has been sent to the parents. And now we're hoping that the results will be what we're looking at. How are kids on IEPs doing? What progress are they making towards their goals? How does that impact their overall education and success, graduation rates? So the results, as I shared before, should be what progress we're making on IEPs. SEAC urges meaningful transition planning and vocational education options to increase both student graduation rates and post-secondary outcomes. And vocational education, unfortunately, has evolved to a negative state. A lot of vocational education offerings in this state require kids to take college-level classes, for instance, even in food science and like the medical careers plans and the vocational ed. So it eliminates a lot of kids with special needs from those programs automatically. They don't get in the front door to the vocational education programs. So we wholeheartedly support more offerings in vocational education. We recognize the benefits of individualizing extended school year. We've spoken to that.
We've also had individuals that have served on the Early Dispute Resolution Committee, and we want to value that CDE Early Dispute Resolution Initiative to reduce our disputes and our complaints and the related costs for families and school districts. When Pat alluded to the fact, yes, we don't have enough money, let's figure out a way that we can wisely use that and try to avoid going into dispute resolution meetings. And if we can handle that in a collaborative manner, save ourselves some money and put it towards what's best for the child, we're in support of that. We support Colorado State Systemic Improvement Plan, the SIP, and we collaborated with CDE to develop the state identified measurable result, which is the CIMR plan, and all of that just to support where we're going as OSEP shifts from just compliance to compliance with accountability and with results. SEAC also encourages the monitoring of the results for students with disability on the PARC testing, just to kind of see was that a successful endeavor or not. There has been a few comments as to whether students can take it on pen and paper, but then again, that has to be written in their IEP plan as an accommodation, or it is indeed the park on the computer as it is. So I think we've got one more quick slide. SEAC wants to thank Dr. Shuffle. We so appreciate that you have been our liaison with the State Board of Education, and your input and your phone calls and your attendance when you can to keep us informed of what's going on and what's coming down. And so we have an opportunity to be a forerunner in giving comments, and we really appreciate what you've done. We also thank the work that you've put into it, Mr. Lundin, and also Commissioner Hammond. We appreciate that, and the State Board of Education, because without you, our whole state would fall apart in the educational world. So we just appreciate.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
We need that. And CDE, then the exceptional student services unit, we appreciate all the effort and work that you guys put in and worked alongside with us and given us, you know, what's coming up and where our statistics are and sometimes how sadly that looks for us. But we just appreciate your advocacy in the area of children and youth with disabilities. And so thank you to both of you and all of your group that works with you.
And the very last thing I'd like to say is SEAC decided to focus this year on going back to our legal mandates. And our primary legal mandate is to advise the State Board of Education and the CDE on unmet needs of students with disabilities in the state of Colorado. We continue to do our annual report in June, but we're trying to figure out ways to get communication to you and just say maybe one piece, one little tiny thing every couple months instead of having this report like this. And we're working on it. So you might see our faces just very short periods of time, more frequently.
Excellent. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions? I've got one question. So I'm trying to understand. There's two reports and two voices, I'm thinking. Am I understanding the situation? It seems like one's the SEAC report, or what I describe as the SEAC voice, and then the other's kind of more of a departmental report that goes over to the legislature. Right. So help me understand the voices at the table here.
You have two reports. You have a fiscal advisory report,
yes,
which is for the high cost pool for in-district, out-of-district funding, which is a report that goes to the General Assembly.
Okay.
And then you have the advisory report. So they're two separate committees,
okay.
Chairman Lundin.
And so tell me, what's the advisory? Because as I'm looking at the what is SEAC and the duties of SEAC, it seems to me that SEAC is essentially designed to feed information to CDE, to the board, so that we have an opportunity to hear that voice. I'm seeing the reports on a standard CDE letterhead, and I'm curious, you know, what the structure is, how this comes to us. I'm essentially trying to understand, is there an extra filter in the mix as this report is prepared?
Well, currently we're establishing bylaws within the SEAC that would set up an annual report. But there is a branding piece to this that SEAC did originally have their own branding, but when the state moved to a branding process, they were branded as well. So am I answering your question, Chairman Lundin?
You're probably getting at it, yeah. So am I using the wrong brand at this point on my letterhead?
I'm not sure. I'll let Commissioner Hammond respond to that.
I'm not aware of it. If I was, I'd probably tell you you were.
Okay, so so just so I do understand, the voice of this report is SEAC.
Correct.
But because it's an advisory board to feed information to CDE, now who made the decision that their brand was the same brand as the state's?
We requested that information through communications as to how we should brand, and since they are an advisory to the board, to the department, that they should use the branding of the state.
Okay. So, but as I read this, again, back to my original question of voice, as I read this report, I should perceive this report as the voice of SEAC, not the voice of CDE.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
Chairman Lundin.
So then, would you respond to that as well?
I will. We had asked that question ourselves because in the past we had used the SEAC branding that has been in place for the previous 6 years. sought that advice, and I think Randy went to the communications committee. But it is two different. I mean, we're not employees. We're volunteers. We're not employees of CDE.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be clear. This is an independent voice, even though it's got the department logo on it.
Yeah, it's an independent voice as we honor SEAC in effort to communicate to the State Board of Education.
Pat?
I would just like to say we tremendously value our partnership with the CDE, but in order for us to fulfill our legal mandates, we have to have a separate identity. We have to be able to take a position or a stand that might be somewhat different than CDE, and it should be a voice. I believe we should have separate branding for SEAC.
Okay, so I picked that an issue here then.
Yeah.
I was just trying to understand who was speaking.
Yeah, we've talked about it, and I think that with any advisory committee, you need to have some independence. We have a very wide constituency group, so we have educators, we have administrators, we have teachers, we have parents, we have, you know, state law enforcement agencies, homeless commissions. It's a pretty big group, so it's not just CDE. There might be some of us that have ties to CDE, but in essence, we're an independent body.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, may I follow up with that as
sure,
well?
Sure, please.
We did ask for an informal opinion from the Attorney General's office regarding CX's role.
Wow, this has really been developed.
Regarding CX's role in legislation, in testimony. And since they are an advisory to the state, they as a group cannot testify necessarily on behalf of the department. They would have to testify individually.
So their branding would be separate in that case?
Absolutely separate, yes, sir.
Okay. So I guess just footnote, this is something worth clarifying perhaps as you move forward. If they desire an independent voice, and there are legal regulations that would require that they be an independent voice in certain circumstances, you know, making that clear before this board is probably worth the effort as well. Oh, Jane?
I would like to ask Carrie, is the SEAC a state board committee? The Gifted Education Advisory Committee is also state board established, I guess. We appoint members of both advisory committees. I don't remember right now if there's a list that it contains more than that. But the same exact role parameters works with the Gifted Education State Advisory Committee as well. They lobby, they meet with legislators separately, they take their own positions, they advocate for issues or programs, things that are voted on, agreed to by their group in a representative way. So I would suggest that, you know, I think that's a worthy question to ask, but it is also, it's part of the department by function of being part of us. So it's part of the state agency, so you can't really separate it.
So back to my point, this is, I just wanted to be clear on the voice, irregardless of the logo at the top of the page. The voice is that of SEAC.
SEAC is probably the same thing, right?
Yeah, probably is. Yes, it would be. So.
Okay, other questions, comments? Dr. Scheffel?
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity to serve on this committee with all of you. It's been a great honor, and I appreciate just engaging with you on some great issues. I think there's sort of a natural tension between SEAC and its roles in terms of statute to advise the board and the role of CDE in compliance and administering the funds. So your role is a little different. It's advising the board on issues related to meeting the needs of individuals with special needs, the department administers the funds, and more toward compliance, right? So I think that is a bit of a tension there. And it kind of relates to a couple of questions I have with respect to response to intervention. We know special education is a huge entitlement program. There's billions of dollars associated with it nationally. And there's always been an issue with how well do the funds work, and do they serve the needs of individuals with special needs. And so response to intervention was a big deal about 5-10 years ago. And also special ed reinvented, which Keith will recognize, was a reform effort within the state to say, how can we ensure the money's actually do something? I mean, it's one thing to have an entitlements program and to attach funds to students based on their category of disability. It's another thing to hold individuals accountable that receive the funds to ensure that the money money actually matters. And when we look at numbers of months gain in achievement areas, particularly in literacy and math for identification in a category, we don't see a lot of great outcomes. So what can we do about that? So response to intervention was supposed to address that. Does anybody have any data? How well did RTI work? Is there another initiative that replaced it? How are we doing with Special Ed Reinvented, which was all about holding entities accountable for the money and the fact that it might impact student achievement? And you might have different responses to that, the state versus CIEC, but where are we with that, which is the whole return on investment?
Mr. Chair, may I go ahead and respond to this? You know, we're currently in a process of transitioning to, as was mentioned, results-driven accountability, which is going to put us into the metrics of achievement at a very high level, looking at return on investments, looking at not just compliance side of special education, but truly seeing, looking at the outcomes for kids, what they're actually learning, what we expect them to learn. And the response to the intervention process is in rule. It is the law of Colorado regarding, one, eligibility for a specific category of specific learning disability. So I think we struggle with it, though, across the state. We truly do as school districts and as we look at how we are implementing that. It's a challenge to, in a very short time frame, use a response intervention to identify a student with a disability. So I guess back to, we are looking to really advance how we're working with students, what were our expectations around what they are to learn, how soon it takes them to learn it, and how we basically interact within the whole growth model and how much we really should be expecting. We don't want to eliminate high expectations for students with disabilities, but we want to be reasonable about their developmental approach to moving and to growing as learners. So I don't know, Dr. Shuffle, if that fully answered your question, but I think...
What are the impediments to getting answers to some of those questions? I know we've been talking about it for years.
Well, I think the historic legend of special education has been compliance. And now, 39 years of compliance, we're moving into 40 years. 2015 is 40 years of special education policy. 39 years of compliance. So this is a new approach that we're moving towards outcomes for students with disabilities. And it's hard for us to retool around that strictly compliance focus into learning outcomes. And I think that's where we are. We've got to work together as a department. We've got to look at the strengths that other units have in terms of how kids learn, how we assess those kids. And we truly have to work together. We cannot be siloed over as special education any longer. And I think these are the challenges you heard today from the group, is that this conflict between, you know, the struggles of kids learning and what we expect them to learn, those gaps are significant. And we've got to work hard. We have a lot of work to do. And
so
the,
we don't have a database that serves answers to those questions?
We do. We have databases around the assessments that are being used. But the way special education has been built, it's been a very individual process. And a lot of the assessments and things that are used are very individual in nature, and they're not the type that can be put into cohorts and aggregated up, I guess you would. So, but as a nation, we are really struggling with students with disabilities, educationally speaking. We know that, and I think that's why Office of Special Education Program is under significant pressure to start looking at this, looking at the investments they've been making, and asking for outcomes for students with disabilities.
Thank you.
I hope we can maybe consider some leadership nationally in that area in Colorado, because there are some great models where states are making great progress on achieving metrics related to response intervention associated with return on investment. So it's a great opportunity for us.
Thank you very much. We will now move out of order in the agenda. I realize we've got some other public servants in the room, and they know that the service of the public is something that it's about the people. And we have family members of public servants in the room who know more or better than most exactly how challenging and personally sacrificial serving the public sometimes can be. So I know you will all forbear as we take some public comment here and then Ms. Neal has the next item, which will be taken out of order. We're going to take that out of order.
No, we were going to do that first and then have it.
Okay. Well, okay. You go at it how you want there.
The board has adopted, formally adopted, two resolutions in honor of our departing members. Our retiring members. I will read those resolutions later when we are having our reception in the foyer. So we'll go ahead with public comment, and then we will retire and read the resolutions and have a celebration in honor of these two fine people.
Well, and we appreciate the honor, but in honor of the public whom we serve, we will now take public comment. First name on the list is Deanna Miller. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. If you have a thought as you hear the buzzer, you may complete your thought, but limit yourself.
All right. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm here today to ask that the Colorado State Board write a letter to the College Board, and I'm not asking for a resolution. I know that takes a supermajority. I'm just asking for a simple letter encouraging them to go back and invite some conservative history professors to help them rewrite the new AP history course to include a more balanced view of U.S. history. Trevor Parker is the senior vice president of the AP Instruction for College Board, and he said in Education Week in September 2014, and I quote, "It's very difficult given the dominance of liberal perspectives in college and high school history departments for faculty committees to avoid unintentionally muting, eluding, or obfuscating the perspectives of the right." So by his very own words, he is acknowledging that the new AP history writers did not represent a balanced coalition of worldviews. The trick, as always, is to find a balance where truth is told. Students should come away with a comprehensive picture of American history that does not push them in any ideological direction. I know that there have been many Colorado citizens who have voiced concerns over the new AP history, so I am hopeful that you will relay our concerns on to the College Board. And thank you. And I'd like to thank Paul and Dean for being such a wonderful chair.
Well, thank you very much.
For all these years, you've been great. And
thank you very much. Thank William Baldacchini. And please correct me if I've mispronounced your name, sir.
Thank you. That's very close.
Okay.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm here because there's a serious problem in our educational system. And to paraphrase a line from our preamble to our Constitution, we as American citizens have a responsibility to preserve the blessings of these liberties for ourselves and our posterity. I am an American citizen. I'm also a veteran of the Korean War, member of the American Legion, chairman of the Proud to Be an American Committee, and the Korean War Veterans Association, who is very concerned with the acceptance of the AP United States history curriculum and framework by this board, pushing aside the weak premise of raising the bar on national educational standards. The core provisions presented diminish or eliminate the historic development of the United States of America, on which the heritage of this nation has prospered on. We can't deny that. The United States of America is an exceptional country based on the wisdom and foresight of our founding fathers, for which we should be very proud, and which we should be the foundation of our American history, so that each new generation will have solid core values to know who they are and where they came from as American citizens. Peter Wood, president of the National Association of Scholars, calls the new AP U.S. history framework a briefing document on progressive and leftist views of the American past, one which weaves together a vaguely Marxist or at least materialistic reading of the key elements with the whole literary litany of identity group grievances. Conservative author Stanley Kurtz asserts the College Board is pushing U.S. history as far to the left as it can get away with at the high school level. This trend is an insult. This trend is an insult to every American, especially those veterans who served and those who died defending this nation, its heritage, and its Constitution. This trend must be reversed. The position of this board is to take that action, to have this happen as soon as possible, so that we can really, truly secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Daniel Stang. I'm sorry. Yeah, Daniel Stang. Do I have that right? Am I mispronouncing? Okay, Ron Kosis.
Yeah, I'm 71. I first started school in 1966 in upstate New York, and I got a job offer I couldn't refuse. It was a big company, had an operation going on in Southeast Asia. You may have heard of it, called the Vietnam War. I, at that time, went and talked to a professor I valued, a teacher that I'd had, and he explained to me that the federal government was lying to the American citizens, that the Chinese and the Vietnamese would never join forces because they'd been at odds for 300 years. This is the kind of message that the federal government is very good at giving out. When they want to persuade people to do what they want, they're willing to put out any kind of message. And I would ask this. If we want our students to be accountable, if we want our teachers to be accountable, why don't we demand that the Department of Education in Washington is accountable? How many trillions of dollars have they spent, and how much has it improved the educational standards of our students in this country? I challenge you that it has not done nothing to improve them except spend money. And now they want to dictate how all of our students should be instructed across this country. The idea that they can put out a whole educational agenda, and you are going to sit here as board members and abdicate your responsibility to evaluate what our students are taught, is anathema to me. It's against everything I believe as far as freedom in this country. And the idea that one of the quotes from the College Board's Debbie Pennington, she said, this is designed, you've got to remember, this is not the story of dead white men as taught by almost dead white men. So they leave out Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King in this his advanced placement curriculum. This is what we want our students learning, that we don't want to respect the founders of this country. If I sound angry, I am. This is ridiculous. The idea that our country is going so far to the left now, and much of that is happening in our schools and our colleges. As an example, there was one time where they showed on it during, prior to the last election for president, they had a voting booth or voting area set up in a school, and Barack Obama's picture was on a mural where it's where the election was being held. This is, and nobody seemed to mind that.
Thank you, Mr. Kosis. Angelique Matthews.
Excuse me. Good afternoon. It's always a pleasure to speak to the board. I don't have much of an agenda today other than to first of all thank this current board for the service that you've given us. I know that it's not a paid position, that you volunteer your time, and so I do really appreciate that. And then the second is just a request, or a couple of requests for the board. I feel I've seen you guys so much this year that we almost feel like family. I would like to, my second is a request to the board to keep an open dialogue with the public, specifically on issues such as Common Core, the standards, testing, data mining, and also the new AP US history. And with that, I would like to ask the board to address the public's concern regarding the AP US history framework by pressing, excuse me, I have a frog in my throat, by pressing the College Board to review and rewrite the framework to include items that we feel have been erroneously left out of the framework, such as the Founding Fathers, seminal documents, World War II battles that the U.S. was involved in, American exceptionalism, and most concerning to me is that there is not enough emphasis placed on the Founding Fathers. America's history is exceptional, and I didn't see that in the framework. I do understand that it is a framework and that teachers may add at will to the framework. However, children will be tested on that particular framework, which forces the teachers who are pressed for time to teach to the test. And so I don't see how teachers will have the time to add what I believe are really crucial segments in the U.S. history. I think Texas has some great frameworks. Why don't we just copy their frameworks? Last, I would like to ask that in conjunction with this public comment, that the board would consider a two-way open dialogue with the public in some format. I know that we've requested that before, and for some other reason, it's not been accepted, but I would just ask that be a consideration to where we can speak freely with you guys instead of just this one-way dialogue. And thank you again for your service, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. Sheila Brown.
Hello, thank you for letting me speak today. I am here because I am very concerned about the revisions to the AP U.S. History Test, so concerned that I'm opting that my son not take it next year. He'll be a junior in high school, and I will not have him take this test. Jane Robbins of USA Today writes, defenses of the College Board's revised APUSH test framework have ranged from it's a balanced document to teachers will have flexibility to what's wrong with a leftist slant. None of these defenses should be acceptable. To the balanced document argument, we say, read it. A Pioneer Institute study by experts describes the new framework as a portrait of America as a dystopian society, one riddled with racism, violence, hypocrisy, greed, imperialism, and injustice. She says, our view is that critics don't know much about history. American exceptionalism has been scrubbed from the seminal documents such as the Gettysburg Address, George Washington's farewell address, and Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address. They have vanished. Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, gone. No mention of Hitler at all, the Holocaust, the liberation of Europe that America provided, the American Revolution, the World War II battles such as D-Day and the Battle of the Bulge. And most of all, the thing that's left out of this test is the sacrifice of men like these right here. Our U.S. military that have given up everything for us. It really, really bothers me. It truly bothers me that they're trying to change our history. I'm very upset about it.
Thank you very much. Anita Stapleton?
Hi, I'm Anita Stapleton from Pueblo. And today we are turning in 108 letters of opposition to the Common Core, bringing us to a total of 3,366 voices of Coloradoans who would like us to be out of Common Core. I do thank you, this board, for the work that you have done this past year. However, we have a lot of work to do in the next year, and we vow, at least I do, to bring solutions each time I come. I know we've done a lot of nagging, ranting, and I just thank you for listening to that. However, the solutions that we have are too many to go over in 3 minutes, so I'm going to quickly highlight to end this year the things that are important to me. One, I request that the State Board do write that letter of recommendation or thoughts, anything. Take a public stand against the rewrite of American history through the new APUSH. We need to take a stand with other states across the nation who have done just this. I do also ask that you please reject the next generation sciences. I know, I feel it in my bones. They have not gone away. They are still on the table for a vote. I see them in classrooms just under different verbiage, and I am working diligently to make sure that districts across this state are aware of that and will reject it as well. Dr. Stotsky, here's a positive. She still is willing to come out and help us. And I'm not going to read all of these, but these are alternative pathways of standards in ELA, math, science, history, and geography of all things. Can you remember reading a map? I love geography. She works with STEM programs. Her and Dr. Milgram put these alternative pathways together. She is willing to come here, guys, for free and help us. This is with Common Core still in our state. This is an alternative to get past that, to keep a hold of exceptional education in our classrooms. So I do encourage you to be interested in that. I will be emailing that to you. Last and final thing of concern is data privacy. We all know that FERPA has been gutted. We have no protection under FERPA. I have a couple articles that I'll be passing out to you at the end. First and foremost, Pueblo, Colorado, my hometown, District 60, a student hacked the student data, got into not only academic stuff, but personal identifiable information. He came forth to his district and said how easy it was, and he's not even that high in high school. The IT guy knew nothing of this happening. This is a tragedy, but it's an eye-opener to this board and all boards across the state that we have to do the duty to tighten up privacy on our students' information, our parents' information, and our teachers' information. And with that being said, one of the questions I wanted to ask, and I'm going to end with this, is that I wanted to know what qualifies an education agency. Per some literature that was being passed out by the CDE, it does state that we have to disclose who those education agencies are that we share information with. That is very important with the second article that I'm attaching for you all to read. And it shows that student data has become a marketplace. And what are we going to do at the state level, like California, who developed the Student Online Personnel Information Protection Act, to do that? And I'm asking Colorado to please follow suit.
And that was your final thought.
Thank you
very much. All right, that's it for people.
Merry Christmas. That's my final thought.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who cares to make public comment? Okay, seeing no one, then the next item on the agenda would be board member reports, but I would ask my fellow members to forbear. All right, now with that said, I'm going to do something I have never done before. And that is, I'm going to adjourn us opposed to recess us. So the State Board of Education will be adjourned until its next regularly scheduled meeting. Thank you very much.